On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. You have aligned to the Assembly's outgoing minority leader, Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, who announced plans to step down as the caucus's Democratic leader effective 3 weeks from today. So some roadmap for our discussion. We'll talk about what it's been like to lead as caucus, what a successor should think about, and reflections on the polarized state of the legislature. How have Democrats fared against the Republican majority? What issues should Democrats prioritize? Where do you see common ground? It's 800-642-1234. Representative Hintz was first elected to the Assembly in 2006. He's been minority leader for Assembly Democrats since October of 2017. Representative Gordon Hintz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Good morning. Let's start with the decision. What went into your decision to step down as minority leader? Give us some insights.
Well, I take my job seriously, both as representative for Oshkosh and as minority leader. But I also have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And it's a pandemic. And I just, you know, I've done 4 years. I've worked hard, but I also know that it's been increasingly challenging. My children can't get vaccinated. And, you know, I just think for my work-life balance, you know, this is the best thing for me right now is to prioritize my family and my district. And I was having trouble kind of doing everything the way I wanted to and needed to do it. And so I thought this was the best time for me to step down.
You know, we were chatting with J.R. Ross of Wispolitics Friday about the comings and goings at the Capitol. And J.R. described the life of a minority leader is to hold the majority accountable, offer a different vision, and raise a heck of a lot of money to try to win as many seats as you can.
It is a thankless task. You sometimes have to do a lot of handholding with members to, like, hear out their problems, be a shoulder to cry on. I mean, it's a whole mix of responsibilities that are outside of just policy and politics.
Does this sound familiar? Do you identify with that?
I mean, there are other positives as well. I can tell you that I never thought about being, you know, in leadership when I ran for office or even when I was in office for a while. But I was asked by members to step up. And, you know, it's not about you. You're trying to help steer. I have more carrots than I have sticks. But JR is right about the fact that our goal is to, you know, the goal of the minority is to be in the majority. I've always said we work together when we can. We fight them when we have to. But we try to hold them accountable at election time and present an alternative vision. Our minority did that effectively under my leadership, I think, in making the case against Governor Walker that got Governor Evers in office. And then our job has been to uphold his veto. And, you know, I'm grateful that over the last two cycles, we've added members, which has given us a little more cushion. But it is a different task, and you have to find value in the work that you do as a minority caucus while trying to get things done for your district.
You mentioned election time. And what are your thoughts on running for re-election next year?
Well, this is another reason, you know, right now I feel spread so thin that I don't know that I even have the capacity to think about things. And I can tell you as a member, it's an odd job if you're up for election every 2 years because you can't decide at the last minute. You have to raise money. You have to do the work. And I didn't want to, you know, put my head down and all of a sudden it was time to do it again. I wanted to take a step back, talk to my wife and family, think about, you know, where I am. I've been in office for a while and see how I think that I can and fit in, you know, being a productive member again. I care very much and I'm invested in the future and look forward to working with my successor. And we'll make a decision. I think there are other members probably out there waiting to see what the maps look like, waiting to get to the end of the session. And we'll make a decision at the right time.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with State Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, was first elected to the Assembly in 2006, will be stepping down as the Democratic minority leader. You can join in. What questions do you have for Representative Hintz as to how Democrats have fared against the majority? 800-642-1234. So tell us about your relationship with Governor Evers. Does your job have more ability, more power, more latitude when the governor is of the same party?
Absolutely. And like I said, you know, when I took over, it was in the fall of 17, and we were really the opposition. You know, Senator Schilling and I at the time were crafting the counter agenda, the alternative for what Wisconsin could look like, really pushing back on reckless tax cuts, Foxconn, you know, transportation debt. When Governor Evers got in, we had someone who could really champion, who had the bully pulpit. Issues that we know the majority of voters believe in, changes to redistricting, and our job is really to back him up as you know the leader of our state, and obviously uphold vetoes, override attempts by you know the Republican majority at every measure, and we've done that. But yeah, it gives us more power. We get our power in the minority from having a Democratic governor, and I'm grateful that we have Governor Evers in office, and I'm going to do everything possible to help get him reelected.
You mentioned backing Governor Evers up. And, you know, when you took the position in 2017, you stressed a need for party unity. Have Democrats become unified, or do you still find that there is infighting that is a problem in the party?
Well, I can tell you that Assembly Democrats are unified. And I think at the state level, we really have been because, you know, let's be honest, it's been a challenging decade. And I think to become an effective opposition party and to work our way back, you know, we've really had to get unified around, you know, a set of values. And I think that's where Democrats nationally are best when they're focusing on opportunity, fairness, equality, privacy, accountability. I think it gets highlighted more at the national level, especially when you're one vote short of getting substantive social infrastructure package passed. We're a big tent. We represent different areas. We know that urban and rural districts have differences. You know, Dane County has differences. But I think we try to move in the same direction and recognize that. And, you know, I'm stepping down at a time when I think our caucus is more talented than ever. Majority of Assembly Democrats are women. We've got more diversity. And we've really got a lot of great energy.
Your caucus is preparing to vote today on a new leader. Do you have any advice for your successor?
Well, the biggest advice, you know, that I was given is you don't have to do it exactly like the person before you. There are certain things that you have to do in the job, as you and I have just discussed, related to upholding the veto, being an effective opposition. But someone doesn't have to be Gordon Hintz. They have to be a minority leader. And if you find a way to, you know, engage with your members, try to steer them in the right direction. I think some people misunderstand that the legislative leader, you know, tells people what to do or forces things. I've never told anybody how they have to vote. I've certainly encouraged them or made them understand, pros and cons. I'm not sure that I have as many sticks perhaps on enforcement as the speaker does, but recognize and understand what you control in the job and that there are a lot of variables that you don't, and just try to maximize the effectiveness and put members in a position to succeed.
We're talking with the outgoing Democratic Assembly Minority Leader, Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, as his caucus is voting on a new leader today. What issues should the legislature prioritize 2 years into the pandemic? What strategies should Democratic lawmakers use as they attempt to regain power in the legislature? What do you like or dislike about the party's agenda? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Representative Hintz here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, the outgoing leader of Assembly Democrats, a position he has held since 2017. Assistant Minority Leader is Diane Hesselbein of Middleton. The caucus votes today on a new leader. What questions do you have for the Democratic Minority Leader about how Democrats have fared? What are your thoughts on redistricting, on the state response to COVID, on other pressing issues? 800-642-1234. Representative Hintz with us for about 10 more minutes. I want to ask you, you know, President Biden won Wisconsin by just shy of 21,000 votes. It's an outcome that has withstood recounts and multiple lawsuits. Why do your Republican colleagues choose not to believe this fact that there was no widespread fraud?
Well, I mean, I can't say it enough, but our elections were free, fair, secure, and accurate. I mean, the 2020 presidential elections have been counted, recounted, litigated, and confirmed by multiple courts. And instead of giving credit to the Elections Commission and the clerks for being prepared from everything from cybersecurity to massive turnout in massive absentee balloting from day one, led by Donald Trump and following every Republican in the state, it seems, they've been really trying to discredit our elections. And if you go back to January 6th, they really were laying the groundwork for trying to enable giving legislatures power to overturn the results of the election and determine who the electors are, to do, you know, essentially control all the administrative functions of our elections. So by having an investigation, by continuing to bring up things that have been disproven or that are just outright lies, they try to sow distrust in hopes that they'll be able to make the case that if they're successful in winning the governor's office next year, they can control the majority, that they'll be able to give themselves the power to ultimately administer elections and shape things in 2024. And this is happening in a number of states. It's in a it's a well-funded effort. And in reality, it isn't about any sort of truth seeking. It's really about promoting this idea that our systems are rampant with fraud and only hyper-partisans, in this case, Republicans, are going to be able to fix it.
So, multi-part question here. What do you think the former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman investigation will turn up, or will it be disbanded before reaching any vital conclusions? And how do you think voters will respond?
I don't think it will turn up anything because it hasn't turned up anything. I mean, the fact that we have recordings of reportings and recordings of Inspector Gableman, speaking as a fierce partisan and, working directly with state taxpayers paying for the same cronies that were working for President Trump to try to overturn the election results tells you everything about the credibility. The initial results were going to be ready in October. I don't think they will ever produce a report because anything that they produce will fall short of putting Donald Trump back in office, which will be disappointing to those folks that are down with QAnon or MyPillow guy. And so it's a balancing act because you have people that are true believers in some sort of conspiracy. And then you have, leadership that's on the Republican side that's really about what they can get out of this, the manipulation of these politics to give themselves more power. And so, again, there's nothing the investigation can produce, and there's nothing it probably will produce. But the actual investigation in itself and what it's done to kind of whip the public into a frenzy will be used to justify giving themselves more power, including perhaps overturning the results of the 2024 presidential election as they see fit.
What do you think voters will do? How will voters respond?
Well, this is going to be one of the real challenges. I think Governor Evers has made it quite clear, both from as an American and as someone running in the election cycle, that it's his veto that is really getting in the way from some of these things happening and will continue to do that next year. Again, it is a real concern. You realize how fragile our democracy is and how I think there's a lot of things that have happened in the last few years and certainly last January 6th that none of us ever imagined happening. But I also think it can be an effective political issue. I'm terrified because of what it means for democracy. But I also know that most Americans recognize that there have to be rules, that there's infrastructure, politicians come and go, politics swing back and forth, but the rules and the infrastructure that are there to govern in a democracy deserve to be respected. And power above all is more of an authoritarian state that we see in third world countries around the world, not here. And so I think that will resonate when people understand the stakes and just how extreme these guys on the Republican side are right now.
So, Representative Hintz, the election maps need to be in place by April 15th so candidates can pass out nomination papers for fall primaries. Do you feel confident we will have new maps by then?
Oh, I think we'll have new maps by then. Fortunately, it looks like this Supreme Court has decided to use a criteria that has never been used before, that is nowhere in statute, nowhere in the Constitution, and isn't used in other states to largely bake in the advantage that Republicans drew for themselves, minimizing the number of competitive seats. I'm hopeful that there could be some changes made based on some of the litigants proposing, even under this criteria, more competitive maps. But I think maps will be done. The question is, you know, how bad will they be and how much will they undermine democracy?
Why do you think the state Supreme Court had such an appetite to take on maps this time around?
Because this current Supreme Court is really just an extension of the partisan legislature. You know, we've seen that in their comments. The same people that back their election onto the court are the same people that work to elect Republicans to the legislature. And I think they recognize that they can, you know, give power to Republicans for the next decade and probably into perpetuity if every court uses the same criteria, which, again, is nowhere in statute, which there's not past precedent for. And that raises real questions. So they've really become a rubber stamp nationally. The reputation of the Supreme Court in Wisconsin has been tarnished dramatically. And as disappointing as it was, it probably wasn't a real surprise.
We have State Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh, was first elected to the State Assembly in 2006. He'll be stepping down as the Democratic minority leader, getting his insights on the caucus and the assembly. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. You know, courts aren't supposed to be in the mix in map making. Why is it we don't have a system where the lawmakers and the governor hash it out, that they negotiate it out and keep the courts out of this?
Well, I think as close as we've tried to get to that was with what Governor Evers proposed and what Democrats have been advocating for the past decade. Is to take it out of politicians' hands or to do something more like Iowa, where there's a recommendation made by the commission and the legislature reviews that and tweaks it if they have to, but puts it into place. I would say in this case, to your question, the maps that were put forward by the Republicans really reinforce the dramatic changes and make them worse from 2011. And if the starting point is going to be a map that is already disproportionately skewed to minimize the number of competitive seats, to put as many Republican seats over 60% and make it impossible, even in the worst years for Republicans, for Democrats to be able to be competitive, that's a hard place to start negotiating from. And then Governor Evers was looking at fair process as well as competitive elections. Republicans were looking for political advantage and really being insulated from where the public is. On issue after issue, you know, we see the state being polled and overwhelmingly supporting things like Medicaid expansion, like marijuana legalization, like independent redistricting. And we see the Republicans able to thumb their nose at the will of the public because there's no accountability in our elections. And that's not how a democracy is supposed to work.
Democrats have been in the minority in the legislature since 2011. What would it take? What would it take for them to regain the majority?
Well, look, I mean, I gave a pretty bleak future for the next decade under the current maps, but we know that there has been swings. I know the approach. I'm someone who's a little stubborn in that I believe Democrats on the values that I laid out earlier have something to offer everybody. I don't write off any voters in my district and or around the state. Sometimes there's, you know, distractive, divisive issues, why we see the cultural and social agenda and the fear-based narrative put forward by Republicans. But when it comes to economics, when it comes to improving people's lives, I think the Democratic agenda really resonates. And as we see kind of the disparity between the wealthy and, you know, lower income working class folks around the state, I think I'm hopeful that the pendulum will swing, that we'll see some of the traditional Democratic areas in rural Wisconsin swing back. We got to get out there and listen and respond. And you never know when there's going to be swings. But what we've seen under the current maps is, whoever's running statewide would have to win by 9 or 10 points under these maps for Democrats to pick up enough seats in the legislature. That's just the reality. We overperformed last year. I think we won an additional seat above what President Biden got in Wisconsin. We overperformed Democrats in Michigan and Minnesota and a number of other states. So, I mean, we've seen that our candidates, we've been getting good quality candidates. They've been able to appeal to independents and win over some Republicans, and we've been overperforming. But picking up three seats and hanging on to everybody, made a very small dent in things, and we've got our work cut out for us.
Representative Hintz, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate. Always appreciate it.
State Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we meet one of Wisconsin's Teachers of the Year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher in the Wausau School District. She teaches at John Muir Middle School and Horace Mann Middle School. She's one of five educators selected as 2022 Wisconsin Teachers of the Year. What do you want to ask this longtime educator about teaching in the pandemic? Teachers, let's hear from you. How have you changed? How has your approach to reaching your kids changed? 800-642-1234 to join in. Patty, congratulations and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So what have you learned from the pandemic about reaching kids, about teaching them?
Well, I've always tried to make connections with my students in the classroom. We spend at least 5 to 10 minutes every day just getting to know one another through silly questions and different activities. But during the pandemic, I got to see the other side of them as far as who's taking care of their brothers and sisters while trying to hold a Google Meet, and obviously met all their pets, because what cat doesn't like to walk across the keyboard when you're in the middle of a meeting?
What have you changed about your approach, your style of teaching? Because you are, you do try to make such a connection with the students, and yet through screens, it had to be a whole lot different.
It was. But I actually think we got to know each other better through the screen. I know that sounds not what people would typically think, but in class, if you're just having a class discussion, not everybody answers. There's students that don't care to share what they think. On the screen, I got a written response from everyone. And so I was able to see what those students who wouldn't talk in the class would actually, what they actually thought.
So there was a lot more writing involved.
Well, not a lot, comment here, comment there, sentence. But I just really enjoyed it.
How did you?
It was harder to teach that way because it was hours of reading and commenting, but it was worth it.
Did you have any challenges in keeping their attention in the virtual setup?
I do not think so. I had probably 90 to 100% participation because we just got to talk. So I know when we would have staff meetings, some of the staff would say, the kids are really asking if they can just have some time and have a Google Meet where they can just talk and hang out virtually. And we need a teacher to observe that or listen to that. But we just talked. We ate breakfast together in the morning and talked, and then we'd get on to our curriculum as needed. But it was very comfortable to just hang out in the morning. And we started at 7:40 a.m., and they were all there ready to go.
Wow. If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year, Patty Zemke, a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. You can join in. What questions do you have for a middle school health teacher and these experiences? What innovations in education do you want to stick around after the pandemic? What have you learned by teaching virtually? 800-642-1234. I'm wondering, Patty, you know, in the legislature, there's been a whole lot of pressure from lawmakers to have schools get back to in-person instruction. And as a teacher, did you feel that pressure to get back into the classroom?
I did not, as a teacher. Personally, I wasn't pushing to have the students back into the classroom because we were doing just fine virtually. I love to see the students in the classroom. It's great to see the actual person in the face rather than just a little icon. But for me and my health class, we were doing pretty well online.
So what is your status now? When did you convert to in-classroom?
The students came back late February. And it was a great transition. You know, for example, you asked about, was it boring? Or, you know, I teach health education, so our topics generally aren't boring, and people can think about their life and what's going on and assimilate with the topic. But the first day back in person, we were starting the topic of puberty.
And oh, my that, students, that will get their attention.
Yes. And they were very vulnerable that first day. I asked them what was the most challenging part about puberty that they were expecting. And I had a student teacher who also started for the first time that day. And his eyeballs were so huge. They were as big as plates because he couldn't believe that the students were so forthcoming with what they thought the challenges were.
Did the students feel safe enough to learn and to focus in the classroom because they've had experience perhaps at home with COVID? Maybe a parent is an essential worker. And I know my little ones were so scared about returning to the classroom.
Well, we had the option. If somebody didn't feel comfortable coming to school, they could still meet with us virtually. So I did have students that were still at home. And I had students in the classroom at the same time, which that was hard. You know, I liked it better when we were all virtual, and it would have been better if we were all in person. So having to split the teaching was difficult because it seemed like the students at home kind of got left in the dust, which was the good thing about having the student teachers. They could deal with the chat on the virtual meet and address the students at home while I address the students in the classroom. And then we would just switch so that he got to practice teaching too.
I feel like that would have been a challenge when you're trying to be two human beings, one meeting the expectations of the in-person class community and also having the students at home in still in that virtual setup. Did you kind of feel like a tug of war between two, trying to, you know, go back and forth?
I did. And it was difficult. You know, sometimes I felt like the students at home would join the meet and then I don't know where they went. So like I would try to get their attention or, you know, type in the chat to them and they didn't necessarily respond. Where if that was happening in the classroom, then you just go up to that student and figure out what's going on. So if I wasn't connecting with them at home, it was really difficult to figure out what was happening and what I needed to do to help them.
What questions did your students have about the coronavirus?
I would say they didn't really have too many questions this year, but they did have questions when the pandemic first started the year before. And we would take time to talk about that in class. And I obviously didn't know that much about it. So we just kind of talked about fears and what their adults were doing to change lifestyle to address the issue.
So it sounds like you did some learning together.
Definitely. We learn together in health class a lot. There's times and I'm just like, well, I think we better Google that. Or so, yes, we practice learning together all the time.
We have middle school teacher from the Wausau School District, Patty Zemke, one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year. What do you want to tell a teacher? Do you work in education? What challenges have you faced in the hybrid environment, virtual and in-person classroom, doing both at once? Join in 800-642-1234. Looking back, looking at the future. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. The Department of Public Instruction, DPI, named 5 educators from across the state for its 2022 Wisconsin Teachers of the Year distinction. We're talking with one of them. Patty Zemke is here of the Wausau School District on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What innovations in education do you want to stick around after the pandemic? What has your school learned over the past year and change about new ways to reach kids? Still time to talk about education, how classroom learning changed, what the future holds. 800-642-1234. And Patty's with us for about 9 more minutes. Patty, the CDC recently released figures showing a sharp rise in suspected suicide attempts among adolescent girls, and attempts were up 50% in February and March this year, year over year. How worried should teachers and parents be about the pandemic's effects on student mental health?
I think everyone should be very worried. I mean, the adults that take care of these kids should be worried. And the mental health has kind of been a taboo subject for so many years. And now that we have social media and we have the ability to do these surveys and hear from more people, we're realizing, wow, mental health is really an issue. I just want people to start listening to their children. Start listening to the students. And that's why I take time every single day to just talk to my students, because you learn so much from them. And if they're going to turn to schools, which is likely, I mean, we get a lot as an educator to do for our students. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with addressing the mental health needs through making connections. But there are some teachers that are really afraid of that. They don't know how to address mental health. They're worried, well, if I take time out of my class, then how am I going to get to the end of the book by the end of the year? And we've got to realize that just making connections with our students will help them engage and will help them empower them to raise their voice and say what they need.
Do you find teachers in your district have enough training, have enough resources on mental health?
Well, I actually ran some training a few years ago. I was in charge of a grant that was to create safe and supportive schools. And so we did an online training where there is scenarios and it had a student saying something and then the teachers had to choose the right reply or figure out how to deal with that situation. And the training also included, how do you talk to that student's adult? Because sometimes the adult doesn't necessarily want to hear the concerns that your child may have, you know, a mental health issue. We also have a great counseling staff. And if I feel that a student's in danger, you know, they deal with it right away. There's like within the next 2 minutes, it's very quick turnaround. So I feel pretty confident in our counseling staff to help these students.
And it sounds like those minutes really matter, that you really can't back burner this or maybe get to it tomorrow.
Definitely not. If I feel that a student's in danger, I make the phone call right then. I just stop. Well, I let the student know that I'm going to make the phone call. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't blindside them. You need to keep the conversation going. In fact, at one conference that I went to, we we're used to, okay, you call the counselor and a counselor comes and gets the student and then, you know, you go on with class. Well, one school district, if the student was connecting with the teacher and talking to them, the teacher still called the counselor, but the counselor was there to continue the class. While the teacher continued the connection and conversation with the student, which is very interesting. And I think, wow, that's kind of a good idea. Now, obviously, I wouldn't know the steps to take that the counselor would, but at least I could continue the conversation and then the counselor would step in later.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of Wisconsin's 2022 Teachers of the Year. Patty Zemke is a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. And we want to hear from you. Do you work as an educator? What challenges have you faced in the pandemic? How has your teaching changed? How has your school changed? 800-642-1234. You know, Patty, your application for Teacher of the Year, it mentioned working with students to develop grit. Why is grit important?
Grit is important because it also helps empower the students. Students want to be heard. They want to be listened to. And giving them the grit to continue and to push forward, even if someone doesn't want to listen, I think is important. I always say, if you tell one adult and they don't listen to you, then go tell another adult and keep telling until someone actually listens to you. You have to persevere, and grit is very important in all aspects of life.
How do you develop grit in middle schoolers?
Oh, I don't know if I can develop their grit, but I can help develop or see their resiliency. Building empathy in the classroom. When we're having those conversations and listening to one another about what they did over the weekend or what happened the day before, we develop empathy and we learn how to listen to one another and how to respond appropriately. And then just through that, sometimes the other students encouraging, you know, if the student was not feeling successful in something over the weekend, the others can help encourage, and I guess empathy develops grit in my mind.
It sounds like the relationship building that you are doing in your class each day is also, you hope to carry over into all aspects of their lives, as well as you see these kind of skills build up in action through these deeper conversations.
Yes. Yes, they need to learn how to speak to one another with social media and texting and chats. They don't really understand how to have, you know, a face-to-face conversation and talk to one another. And unfortunately, a lot of students don't have an adult at home that talks with them. The adult at home is on their phone also. So I really think it's important to continue learning how to have a conversation. If we wanted to talk about some of the racial unrest in our country, we need to be able to do that in a respectful, responsible way. So that's where I hope it continues, like into adulthood, talking about tricky subjects. How can we do this respectfully?
Let's bring in Karen now in Green Bay. Hi, Karen. What are your thoughts?
Well, I worked at a school district, and we went through the trauma training and all of those things, and the teachers were very accepting of it. The problem we had is that during the Walker reign, we lost guidance counselors and social workers. So the teachers really, the social workers that were there and guidance counselors could not deal with all of the students in the district. So we weren't able to deal with the students' problems, you know, quickly. And a lot of times the teachers didn't have time to take take their time to deal with the child, you know, when they really needed it. Sometimes they go to the principal's office. The principal wasn't available. It was really tough. We need more social workers and more guidance counselors in our schools, even and psychologists. It just was really, really sad.
Karen, thank you. Yeah, Patty, your reaction to Karen.
I very much agree with that. It has been really difficult with lack of staff and lack of funding. Our district is lucky that we are bringing in 10 more counselors this year. I think it's 10. Don't quote me on that number. Into our district to help fight the needs of our students. But yeah, we got all that trauma training and to become a trauma sensitive school, but then not to be able to help the students as we knew was needed was really disheartening.
What might the fall hold and how you will reconnect with students? What are you anticipating?
I'm anticipating a lot of smiling faces. They always like to come back in the fall anyway, because during the summer, they don't get to see their friends as much, you know, whether they're traveling or they live far away. I think it's going to be a breath of fresh air, but also, you know, reteaching and relearning. They don't know what it's like to be in the classroom all together and how school starts. They didn't even learn how to open up a locker last year because they carried all their things in a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
So even those that are going into seventh grade, my school is sixth, seventh, and eighth. Those that are going into seventh grade, it's going to kind of be like their sixth grade again, as far as learning lockers and time schedules and getting from class to class.
Patty, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Patty Zemke is a sixth grade health teacher for the Wausau School District. She's one of five educators selected as 2022 Wisconsin Teacher of the Year. We'll talk more after a news update on the Ideas Network. And I hope you stay with us this week on the morning show. We need your help as we talk about board games tomorrow, the new ones, the classics. Do board games take center stage at your family gatherings during the holiday season? Do you have a closet that's shoved full with board games that haven't been used in a while? Do you want some recommendations on what board games you should check out? We'd love to hear your ideas about the board games you love that you keep coming back to. You can always call our live program as we put these conversations together. But here's this number where you can leave us a message anytime. As we put together these future conversations, that number is 833-424-3327. Let me give that number again. It's 833-424-3327. Be sure to mention your name and city so we can thank you on the air. Stay with us next hour as we explore the year in audiobooks. What are your favorite audiobooks of the year? We talk with the founder and editor of Audiophile Magazine and look back at 2021's best audiobooks. Is there one you return to again and again? How do you listen to them? Join in All Things Audiobooks, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.